My name's Sean Collier. I'm back in the Southside Works party room, joined for the first time by the very talented Steve Gottschalk and Renee Rabinold. Hi, guys.
Hey. Hi, Sean.
Welcome to the show, and welcome to the party room, which is even creepier than usual. Whatever specific combination of movies is bleeding through the walls is creepier than usual, so thanks for bearing with me. And that movie was good, right?
Yeah.
Okay, that's the short version. For much more, listen this week when we're going to talk about a movie you have not heard of but should probably see. It's called Hell or High Water. This week on You Can't Handle the Truth.
And now, it's You Can't Handle the Truth. Honest reviews of the newest movies. Part of the Epicast Network. Hear more great podcasts at epicast.tv.
It is You Can't Handle the Truth for Friday, August 19th. And hi, friends.
Hi, Sean.
I could introduce the two of you, but just tell everyone who you are. Go ahead.
What do I say about myself?
You know, some of your...
Maybe your name.
I'm Renee Rabinold.
And some of your artistic endeavors.
Sure. Yeah. I do a lot of improv in Pittsburgh, mostly at Arcade Comedy Theater.
Mm-hmm.
And I do a lot of photography. I have a photography business, Indelible Photography. And I just do a lot of art in general.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah.
You're one half of the very popular improvised comedy, improvised theater duo When I'm Not a Person, mm-hmm. together with Karen Forty, where you personify objects.
That's true.
That's a ton of fun. You're also part of the recently disbanded Hotel Nowhere.
Well, we're not disbanded. We're just on a break.
On hiatus.
But we will probably return.
Probably pop up in reunion.
Oh, I'm also technically a part of Irony City, but many things have gotten in the way of me actually performing with them lately.
And does your solo improv have a name?
Oh, it's called Group Hug.
That's right.
And I do a performance with a bunch of hand puppets, where it's just me and my hand puppets, and we interact with each other.
And I just, as a sign of my admiration for that one, I can tell you, listeners of the show have heard Missy Marino on here before, and I just started taking one-on-one improv classes with Missy. And specifically, I think we're training towards solo improv.
Mm-hmm.
And in explaining why I'm interested in that, I particularly cited Ann Tercera's solo thing and your solo thing as... Hey, that made me realize that you can do solo improv and it can be great. Yeah. So
you can, but it's mm-hmm. it's a rare breed and challenging. You should also, if Neil S. Shaw, who's also part of Iron City, if you ever get an opportunity to see him do the Neil S. Show, that's the first solo improv I was ever exposed to, and he's great at it. It's really hard because the main thing that you normally get from improv, which is like, trust your scene partner.
Right.
Yes, and your scene partner. Your scene partner's not there.
Yeah.
So that's a whole new set of challenges.
101 of solo improv is loving yourself.
Yeah. No, I have no idea if this is going to go anywhere. I mean, this could just be like something that I'm doing for fun and to grow as a human.
Yeah.
But I'm interested. That. Yeah. Yeah. And Steve, who are you?
Yes, I'm the voice that started talking without introducing himself.
No, that's okay.
My name is Steve Gottschalk. I also, well, by day, I'm a project manager at a software company. And by night, I am an improviser. Improv comedy, improv theater, we won't worry too much about defining terms like that.
Yeah.
Currently, I'm the producer of Your Life, the musical, which Renee also participates and helps me produce, which is a show that plays about once a month at Arcade Comedy Theater. And what it is, we take someone from the audience and have them talk to us about their life. Renee and I interview them. And then we make up a musical about their lives on the spot. That's the main thing I do. We also, both Renee and I, are in Penny Arcade Comedy, which is a family-friendly children's show at Arcade Comedy Theater once a month.
And, yeah, we've endorsed Penny Arcade in the past for you know, people who have had children before.
It's a good thing for people who have children to do. Yeah.
Definitely.
Come out and check it out. But yeah, I've been doing improv in Pittsburgh for about 5 years, and I was part of Wonder Studies, which was sort of what kicked off the whole musical improv craze here. So if you don't know what that's about, listeners, check out one of the many musical shows at Arcade Comedy Theater or other improvised comedy venues in Pittsburgh, because it's really a cool scene and thing that's going on.
Definitely. And there's a specific reason why you're on right now, but we'll talk about that in Extra Butter.
Oh, that's a teaser.
That was a teaser.
It's how movies work. That's a teaser.
Yeah. And no, that's everything I was going to say. Other than, people who have listened a whole bunch know how often I mention Uncumber Theatrics and Enter Sarah's work.
Oh.
And Renee, of course, was in the original.
The original, yeah.
Uncumber show, Her Things.
Her Things. That was still one of my favorite theater experiences to date.
It was one of my favorite theater experiences to date. It's pretty awesome. Wasn't even in it.
Yeah. It's pretty amazing being part of a world.
Yeah.
That is created.
Outside
of just a scripted play, because like having 2 hours of material, you're like, this is all that I have. But when you have so much more than that, you get very immersed.
I ranted about Serpentine a lot on the show, but the three of us briefly had a plan where I was going to pull your character from Her Things through a time portal and insert her into Serpentine, which was briefly approved and then later vetoed by Anne for many, many good reasons, but it would have been
awesome. I generally think because of the personality of my character, it would have just made her crazy having experienced some sort of time warp.
Yeah.
I was not strong enough for that.
That's true.
But
it still would have been hilarious.
Also, when you get two time warps, the mechanics get tricky. If you got one time warp, that's acceptable, but two time
warps. But if you do the time warp again.
There you go.
Let's not do the time warp again.
I don't know if I've ever talked about this. I was a Rocky Horror shadow caster here in Pittsburgh.
Shadow caster?
Have you never paid for a ticket for the Rocky Horror picture show at midnight in a movie
theater? No, I have, but I don't know the word shadow caster.
Shadow cast would be the people in front of the screen acting out.
Oh, shadow cast.
No, not like shadow puppets.
No. I understand.
Were you picturing nighttime fishing?
No, I know exactly what you're talking about. The shadow cast of doing it in front of the screen versus the actual acting the whole thing out.
Right.
I've seen it mostly just performances, so I don't. I guess that's why I know that shadow casting exists, and I've also seen a combination of both.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mainly just for that, like, people have tried to absorb that into other movies. Like, people will do that for Clue just to force it. Or, like, some really... Like, people will do that for, I think, The Sound of Music.
I feel like I've seen it tried on Monty Python. Sound of Music.
Well, in Monty Python, it'll happen. But that's really...
I haven't seen in person. I would actually like to see that in person.
It's really just a thing that, for some reason, like... It makes sense on a quantum level for Rocky Horror. Like, the reason why that's entertaining can never be explained or defined, but it's been happening for 40 years. So
when I've experienced that with people, with all the call and response going on and people joining in for songs and all that, all I can think is, this is like Catholic Mass for people who, like, don't do religions.
It kind of is.
It's like all the same instincts.
Didn't you do it for the first time with me?
Yes, that's the first time I did it where it was actual Rocky Horror. I did it once before that for Hello Donnie, which was a show that used to happen at the Cabaret Theater in Pittsburgh, where they'd have a sing-along of various different musical theater things, and one of them was a Rocky Horror night where they had lyrics printed out so that you could sing along with them.
Oh, I see. And I randomly picked up an old issue of Pittsburgh Magazine at work and was just flipping around, and I saw a reference made to the fact that the Rocky Horror Picture Show gags were starting to get stale, and this was like summer of 1980. It's like, no, they are, but 35 years later, we're still doing it.
New movie
there's a TV remake on MTV, I think, in October.
Oh, I hope Tim Curry's up well off for
they
that.
They have him in like a, I don't remember what it was. I saw like a blip of it and I didn't investigate the other day.
Is he the narrator, the criminologist?
Oh, that'd be great.
That would
think he is
that kind of makes sense.
I'm just wondering what he can handle because I can't remember when the stroke was.
Yeah, I know he's not
a stroke, and it was very sad.
I remember seeing the clip and being like, "Oh, yay!
Yeah,
you look capable."
And Laverne Cox is Frankenfurter, and she'll be great.
Nice.
That's gonna be cool.
But anyway, all right.
While we're in the Wayback Machine,
yeah.
Another thing that you on the podcast, I believe, have covered is Scare House.
Right.
And it should be noted that in the first basement of the Scare House, I was. Sometimes called the Skin Man and sometimes called Staples, but I was that
really?
Character way
How,
back when.
I feel like I don't know that. Did I know that and I'm just blocking it
I
out?
I feel like you might have known it, but often when I tell people that, they're like, that's like a different person than you. And I'm like, I know.
Wait, what
I
did
know,
you?
It was acting.
And we talk about it. We go to the basement every year on the, or
we, I haven't
we
done
might
it
not
years.
Have, we might not have done it. No, the first year of the basement was before we started the podcast.
Yeah.
We've done live from the basement for the last two. What did you do?
So for the first basement, I was the guy in the first corridor. So you would come in and there would be, you would come in and there was a very pale fellow who looked like the girl from The Ring.
Did you, after that,
there was a very dark hallway where a guy presses you against a wall and feels your face and tells you he needs your skin. And then when you get to the end of the hallway, he makes you staple him.
That was you?
That was me.
That was traumatizing.
Yes.
Renee, did you do this?
No, I didn't know Steve the first year. The second year, he did Scare House when we were first dating. And I was like, I don't do scary things.
And that time,
I don't do scary stuff.
I did that in the first basement. Then we had a few in-between events where I was... At the Christmas one, I was old guy who was soliciting donations for the church. And for Halloween, for Valentine's Day, I was a Harlequin clown. And then in the second go-round of the basement, I was Uncle Tony. There were two incarnations of Uncle Tony. First, there was drunk Uncle Tony, and then there was meth head Uncle Tony. Those are two different guys.
I don't remember Uncle Tony, but being that the skin and the state, that was one of the first things that happened to me in a Scare House basement, because that was the first installment. That left a lasting impression. And that character has no resemblance to you whatsoever. I mean, that was
not really.
that was intense. Like,
yeah.
I did not want to fire staples into your stomach, but you made me, and it was a harrowing experience.
That came about very organically of just like, you're in this dark corridor, do something, and then it got with the weird touching, and then it got like weird touching like the face and
I remember that part of it
as
well.
Like, oddly, like people aren't supposed to do this in a haunted house, but I signed a release form that said they are. And then the stapling at the end, I think it was the haunt manager that year came up where he was like, we need to have something at the end, came up with the stapling. And then when I like made people staple me, cause I was like, there's no way I'm going to like staple a person and have it
back,
cause there were no staples in there.
Yeah.
But, and in a weird improv way, I was like, oh, this is where I let them yes and me, because I staple myself and act like I'm dying. And then even though you know that there's no staples in there, still, you're like...
No, it was plenty convincing. Renee, you're surrounded by people who really nail the Scare House basement.
Mm.
Because last year, like, your improv partner, Karen Forney, it was definitely the most memorable character last year.
That's the thing. What I love is I refuse to do any Scare Houses.
Yeah.
But people tell me. I'm like, just tell me, because I'm not going to go, and I'm not going to spoil it for anyone.
Right.
So I remember Karen, when she was developing her character, sent me, like, this email of, like, her crazy ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I love you. You go do that over there where I don't have to experience it.
And Karen, like, I say this about people who perform in the basement more than any other sentence, but Karen is so sweet and kind and nice and just the gentlest person. And in her room, like with me and Kleiber together, like she was 100% in charge of our lives. Like she, like it was, you are the boss and I will do whatever you say because I'm terrified of you.
That's Scarehouse is very about that.
They're, yeah. They're
out here is a very small woman who, because of the circumstances, is very in charge of large men who may or may not have gotten inebriated beforehand to build up their courage. Not right. saying that you and Aaron did that.
No, no.
Many, there were quite a number of patrons in that mm-hmm. position.
I remember Karen describing her character to me as sort of like this warped, baby, goofy, weird mm-hmm. doll-like thing.
Yeah, that's true.
And honestly, like, whenever I've heard some stories about Scarehouse, it just seems to me like Karen, at least, took her cuteness and her, like, kindness and just distorted it and turned it up really high.
That's fair.
How I feel. Like, that's well, the thing is...
And that can be that, super powerful.
Yeah.
And that is similar to...
We're going to talk about a movie in a minute,
We totally will. My second season character, Uncle Tony, that was part of it. Was first, I was just kind of doddering and then would get up and throw people out of my room. That was drunk Uncle Tony. And then meth head Uncle Tony was like, I was like acting like I was asphyxiating when they would come in. So I was like very vulnerable. And then when they thought I was dead, I would get up and grab them and yell at them and throw them out of the room and scare them within an inch of their life. So I think that is a thing that, I don't know whether it's specifically improvisers who are good at that, but it is like, yeah, here's the nice part and then the scary part.
Oh, I just really just, I have like muscle memory of the staple thing.
Nice.
And truly, I think part of my mind knew that you had worked the basement, but I didn't. I had no idea that was you until this moment.
Well, that was definitely the creative directors who helped me with that. I wouldn't have come up with that on my own.
Uncumber, Scarehouse Basement, non-movie things that happen on this podcast a lot. What else? Have you watched Stranger Things yet? No?
No.
Okay. Then we can't get that one. Do either of you have a strong opinion on Interstellar?
No.
I didn't see
Interstellar. Did Gravity and IMAX. That was good.
Yeah, yeah. All right, then we can talk about this movie. And this this amount of tangents is fine for this one because this is a case where you know, there to me there was not a really hotly anticipated movie this week. I guess the big release is the remake of Ben-Hur.
Oh yeah,
is out Friday. And
mixed feelings. I haven't seen it yet.
I'm probably not going to end up seeing it because this was a week where the movies were scheduled badly, and I think three things that are coming out this week are only being screened tomorrow night. And I'm just more interested in War Dogs with Miles Teller and Jonah Hill, where they play in over their heads like arms contractors. Basically, they're like you know 20-something tech nerds who like found a way to become arms dealers, and it's a true story about the Iraq War. That's more interesting to me than the Ben-Hur remake, but not great podcast fodder. So we ended up here seeing Hell or High Water, which is already out in some markets. I knew nothing about it, but the fact that it was supposed to be good. And it's really good, I thought. Yeah,
I thought it was really good, too.
I'll let the two of you go first. Renee?
I kind of expected not to like it.
Okay.
And as soon as, like, the... first shot and like just the way that it was visually for me was really cool. There were so many lines and I like texture.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably a photography thing. But I was like, oh, this is going to be one of those, you know, robbing a bank movies, but that's kind of sophisticated mm-hmm. and like has something else, which was good.
I wondered whether you were going to be disappointed because it did look like a dude movie to me.
Yeah, like, I was like, really worried. I was going to be like, yeah. Okay, you're drinking beers.
It definitely failed the Bechdel test, but that didn't matter.
No, not even close, but...
There wasn't a woman talking to a woman there, at any point, I don't think.
But,
there were some female characters
Am I allowed to, like, spoil things?
Not really. The rule of thumb is, like, if it happens in the first half and didn't make you go, oh... then you can say.
There was a nod to a woman taking power toward the end. I don't know if...
No, that's not a spoiler. That's true. That's right. Yeah. I mean, so it didn't pass the Bechdel test, but it is not the worst thing I've ever seen. There was just not. That is one of those cases where the story is just written with only a couple of people in it.
Yeah, true.
But the point being, it looked like a dude film.
Right, right.
But it actually was pretty appealing, despite...
Yeah, it was.
...being very dudely. But yeah, I thought it was pretty good. I didn't know what to expect going in, but yeah, I guess... Should we synopsize or just opinionate?
The short, because I don't think anyone's heard of what this movie is. Yeah. It's basically there's a pair of brothers, played by Ben Foster and Chris Pine, who are both great in this. Chris Pine is a little better than I expect him to be. I generally think he's okay, but he was really good here. Ben Foster is always amazing. And they are, this is contemporary. This is set today. Mm-hmm. And they've had some bad luck and they're robbing banks in, you know, small town Texas. Mm-hmm. And it's the two of, and why they're doing it would get into spoilers. So I won't get into that other than to say that they have a good reason. And they're being pursued by, a pair of Texas Rangers. Played by Jeff Bridges and
Gil Birmingham,
who were also great.
Yeah.
And the thing that hit me more than anything else is you'll occasionally see a quote unquote modern Western like No Country for Old Men.
I thought of that comparison too.
Right, but that for example isn't really a Western. That's just a crime movie. With Western trappings.
It's also the Coen brothers, so it's right. Automatically its own category.
Yeah, yeah.
But I know what you mean.
It stands alone. But when you see a Western, you know, the last 10 Westerns that have come out into theaters that I can think of are either contemporary and just kind of have those Western signifiers, or are not set in modern times, like True Grit or that one with Tommy Lee Jones and Hilary Swank, the something. It was a two-word title, and the first word is the. Work that out for yourself. But this was set today, but was absolutely a traditional Western. There's a pair of bank robbers and a pair of lawmen circling around one another, and it's all about... You know, poverty and crime, and you know, it in every way, this is a Western. It just happens to be taking place in 2016, which I guess is kind of the commentary of the movie that in some places, conditions are basically what they were, you know, in pioneer days if you're in a certain level of powerlessness.
Sort of, yeah. I mean, yeah, like you say, the dynamics of it were completely Old West. But it was modern. And the funny thing was it reminded me of earlier today I was listening to Fareed Zakaria's show because I'm a poli-sci geek. So I was listening to him talk about foreign affairs. And he was talking to this guy who wrote this book. His name is J.D. Vance, and he wrote this book called Hillbilly Elegy. And he was talking about basically what he's trying to do. The reason he was talking to Fareed Zakaria was to talk about Trump supporters. Why are there so many of these people who seem so united all across America? What's so similar about them? And he kind of drew a lot on, it's like, it's all these people from towns where there are industries that dried up, whether they mm-hmm. be energy, oil, that was alluded to in the film, or manufacturing, which wasn't directly alluded to in the film, but there were a lot of old cars.
There are a lot of old signs, just in general.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this guy in his book was talking about how there were all these places where that all kind of gone away. And a lot of it, they didn't talk in the movie about blaming China. But in this book, this guy talked about how these people like blame it on foreign powers mm-hmm. breaking the rules in the energy markets and in the manufacturing markets and undercutting all the jobs. And mm-hmm. then the federal government not holding those people accountable and instead supporting renewable energy and other things that free trade agreements, things that, you know, were not likely to give these people their way of life back. And this guy also talked about how they had this, he rooted it directly to a Scotch-Irish heritage, which I balk at a little bit because I'm part Scots-Irish, but
most of us are.
He's talking about this sort of
sorry,
everyone except Renee. He was talking about this sort of
culture of honor and how you like stick together with your family and your friends, and how like you don't go to the law first. You try to settle it yourself, and you kind of feel like a fool if you have to go to the law. And also just a general mistrust of educated people and city people. How are they trying to what are these people in their stuffed shirts trying to do? How are they trying to screw me? And that theme definitely came up in the movie, of like these banks that they're robbing. I'm kind of like, well, these guys are trying to own all of this land now and take it away from the people.
Yeah. It's, I mean, that's the fantasy of it a little bit, right? Because there were like two, like very surface nods to the fact that there might be some racism in Texas, but other than that, it was all, you know, very like Frank and Jesse James versus the banks. Like the banks are the bad guys, and you know, the lawmen and the bank robbers are just kind of sides of the same coin in a dance with one another, but the banks are the real bad guys. So it simplifies it back to those, it simplifies modern conditions back to Wild West terms. But I thought it still felt relevant, and you know, like it had something to say about the world.
Well, that was the thing, how much they just mistrusted authority, whether it be the bank or whether it be the lawmen.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny thing is, there were points in the movie where it showed kind of the futility of those systems. Like there was a point where the lawmen happened to be going by this bunch of cowboys with a whole bunch of cattle. And they were trying to get around this big brush fire that had grown.
Yeah.
And then the
just to hammer home that this is a Western, cows were being led away from a brush fire at one point in this film.
Yeah.
That probably was the most Western thing of the movie.
Well, the most Western thing of the movie. And then the one lawman who was an Indian, Native American, again to hammer home the Western theme, leans over to Jeff Bridges and says, like, should we call this one in? And he says, nah, there's not really any point. You know, by the time they get here, this will all be gone. You know, it's kind of like again, show just how futile it was that the law couldn't make it right. And then even the cowboy, in commenting to Jeff Bridges, explaining why he was out here with all these cattle, he said, and I'm supposed to, it's any wonder why my sons don't want to do this for a living.
Yeah,
it's kind of all this futility, not just of the futility in the old ways and futilities in the systems that are trying to bring order, and just futility everywhere.
I felt that way with even the characters. It was like you were talking like the two sides of the same coin, the bank as the actual bad guy, quote unquote. But it was like, even if they did their job and felt good about themselves, they caught the bad guy or they got this money, they wanted to get it done to feel good about themselves, but it didn't actually make that much of a difference.
Yeah, there's a lot about how the Rangers are kind of just doing their job for reasons that are mainly tied to keeping a job.
Yeah.
And the bank robbers have a sense of futility about it as well. Like you know, Ben Foster's character at one point acknowledges that he does not expect this to work. And Chris Pine has more on the line and says, well, what do you mean? Why are you doing it? And Ben Foster says, well, look, do you know anyone who ever got away with anything? And we're just doing what we do. It's interesting how it's interesting. And the other thing is, it's kind of an enjoyable movie, which is weird when everyone and everything is hopeless, right?
Yeah. I think that speaks to the filmmaking, because the way that I guess that's the film writing, that the way that information unfolded was very interesting. We had these two bank robbers, and then we find out they're brothers, and then we find out kind of the dynamic between them, that Ben Foster's character is this really, he's just like looking for a thrill as much as he can, and he's like overly ambitious and completely impatient. And then his brother Chris Pines, who's a little bit more cautious but completely loyal. Like there's a scene where Ben Foster's character is sitting in the car at this gas station, and these young punks
drive up, and the one starts picking a fight with Ben Foster's character, and Ben Foster like says like, "You should back off because you'll feel like there were 10 of me or something." Yeah. And makes this threat, and so the young punk gets out this gun and starts talking shit, and then Chris Pine comes over and beats the tar out of him, and goes to beat the tar out of the guy in his passenger seat. And again, that reminded me both of that book by J.D. Vance I heard about earlier today, but also a chapter of a book by Malcolm Gladwell, Outliers, which got very famous for the Beatles working 10,000 hours in Hamburg. But in a different chapter of it, he talks about the Hatfields and the McCoys and like culture of honor and having to like look after each other. And that was just like so much Chris Pine's character's downfall was anything this idiot brother of his was going to do.
Right.
You know, all this ambition to do all these stupid things that his brother was going to pull him into. He had to be loyal every step of the way.
Right. Because
that was all he had was his loyalty.
Right.
Heartbreaking.
And we're going to take a break in a second and get to the other thing, the project that you're working on. That's that tease again. But in discussing that project before the movie started, Renee, you remarked that Steve does analysis and you do feelings, both on that project and in your marriage. And so from a feelings perspective, because I can lose that too. I can definitely get tied up in, how the film was made and get to like what I felt about it an hour later, if never. So go for feelings, Renee.
Well, we were talking about the futility of everything around all these characters and their situations. But I was thinking about how, like you were talking about them being brothers and sort of like they tease each other and other characters. Yeah. And then the cops also have this sort of teasing relationship and this sort of like unsettled aggression that they have is actually what keeps the movie rolling. Like their strength, their sort of, they have this meanness, and it was also very Texan, I imagine. I don't know anything about Texas, but like it was, even the like people at the bank that they held up the guns to, even those people had a bite to them from the beginning. Think about even there was like the first scene, there was like a woman and she was certainly going to give them the money and do what they said, but she was mean and like had this punch to her. And I thought that within the characters was like the most satisfying thing about the movie to me, to watch these people be like, well, yeah, F this situation, but I'm going to get what I want. And I was like, good.
Yeah. Toughness was like
toughness,
the core virtue, the core value of the whole place.
Yeah.
The whole world.
And I was like really annoyed by a lot of things that were happening in the movie, but that was like, that was very redeeming to me. All the characters had that redeeming quality about them.
I'm not going to... I want anyone who sees this movie, I want them to be surprised by this scene, so I'm not going to allude to what it is in any way. But I just want to say that, like, perfectly embedded, like, right in the middle of this movie is... It plays off of what you're talking about, is a perfect two-minute comedy sketch that has no bearing on anything else.
Yeah.
But it's perfectly folded in, hilarious, and springs out of exactly what you're talking about.
But I think that's possibly, I think I know what you're referring to, and that's possibly the toughest character in the whole
thing. It might be.
Everyone on the list, last person I would ever mess with.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Definitely. And no one messes with that character either.
No.
That character gets that character's way.
So if you're thinking, you know, when we keep saying about how bleak and hopeless it is, no, there's a huge laugh right in the middle of this somber, somber movie, which totally worked. That's what confused me, because I didn't know much about it. I had not even watched a preview. But when we came into the theater, occasionally on advanced screenings, there's like a title card up with critics' quotes about the movie, and most of them, you know, talked about the powerful performances and the gritty drama. And then one was like, "It's so damn fun." I'm like, "Really?" but in thinking of this particular scene, I'm like, "No, it actually was fun." I mean, this was really good.
It was really good. And we should also say, as you're talking about the bleakness and the somberness, there is a happy ending. There's a whole lot of damage along the way.
I don't know if I feel that way about it.
That almost was a spoiler, but we're so divided on whether or not that's true that now it's not a spoiler anymore.
Yeah.
That's the point to make. You won't walk out of the theater going, oh, the world.
I was expecting that.
Right.
Especially midpoint. I was like, oh gosh, I'm going to be so sad today.
Well, we're going to talk about your exciting new project in a moment. First, let me tell you about Goods and Evil. Do the two of you go to conventions? I can picture you at conventions, nerd conventions, comic conventions.
We have not. I've done New York Comic Con twice, and my brother is very big. Like, he will travel to all the cons. So I've done YomaCon, and I've done the Ohio Con a few times. But anyway,
Steve,
I have not done many cons in my life. I'm trying to think if I've ever actually done a con that wasn't just a bunch of concerts.
Oh, I would like to say that the last time I went to a con, I dressed as Aang from The Last Airbender.
The cartoon?
The cartoon.
Okay, good.
Not the movie.
No, yeah, the movie's horrible.
The cartoon is amazing.
I've heard that before.
It is very good.
But lots of people like to dress up for cons. And I know many people who went to Steel City Con this past weekend, some of whom met Christopher Lloyd. Nice. Well, wouldn't it be so much better if you had a great Back to the Future t-shirt? And I think they have at least one of those on Goods and Evil. Goods and Evil, if I am getting movies crossed and you don't actually make a Back to the Future t-shirt, please start now. But that's the kind of thing that they make at Goods and Evil. They've got great movie shirts, nerd shirts, vegan shirts, Pittsburgh shirts, all available for you. And if you go to the con without an awesome t-shirt, you can buy one there because Goods and Evil will frequently be hanging out. I don't know if you can get a discount with this offer code in person at a convention, but you sure can on their website, goodsandevil.com. Use the offer code handle, like the middle word, and you can't handle the truth at goodsandevil.com. And we'll be back after this word from the Epicast Network.
Boom! I'm Aaron Kleiber. Guys, check out my podcast, Grown Dad Business, part of the Epicast Network. I talk to guests, some comedians, actors, some pretty fun, interesting people about their kids, about their childhood, about parents. And every once in a while, I bring in my own kids. Like my son Luke. Should they listen to the podcast? Why?
Because we love you.
Oh, okay. Or my daughter Becca talks to us. Why should they listen to the podcast?
Because my dad is funny.
True.
He is a good spy.
He's a good spy?
Yeah.
Not anymore. You just told everybody.
And he's awesome.
Luke, am I awesome?
Yay, poops.
I do poop. Listen to Grown Dad Business, guys, part of the Epicast Network, and you'll get more of this and hopefully more entertaining things that is not happening. Follow your heart.
And we're back, and Renee just spent the break gazing around at the children's movie posters which surround us.
I made eye contact with all the cartoon characters.
There also was the soft sound of someone laughing in the background that may or may not have been children, so...
Yeah.
In the other room.
I always know... They're always so nice to let us hang out in here. And I always am struck by the fact that they could put any children's movies posters they want in here. They have them all the time. And it's mostly really bad movies.
Yeah, it really is.
I mean, they got Finding Nemo, which is classic.
They have Finding Nemo.
The Lego movie is solid.
The Lego movie is good.
Shrek 2, that's fair.
But then you're down Cars to Cars 2.
Okay.
Oh. Epic, The Lorax, The Smurfs 2.
The Smurfs. Oof.
The Nut Job. I forget what that movie is every time until I walk in here. And even now only
I think I watched that. Was that on Netflix once? I may have watched it when I was sick. I watch cartoons, any cartoon on Netflix I can find when I'm like sick.
Huh. That makes you feel better?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm also enjoying the poster of Meet Mr. Peabody.
Oh.
Specifically because it says he's leaving his mark on history on it. And I only I only remember seeing one ad for that movie.
It happened. It's, yeah, sometimes it is head scratching. Like, that's a sidekick to a cartoon that, like, the main cartoon would have no name recognition
I'm
among children.
I don't remember what the name is.
Am I a child? Because I don't know it.
Who and Mr. Peabody? Well, that's
right.
From what era is that from?
Mr. Peabody and Sherman were side characters on Rocky and Bullwinkle, weren't they?
So it is from the 60s.
Right. Or, I mean, the Lorax, okay, because, like, kids are constantly being bought Dr. Seuss books.
Yeah.
But that's, who's that for?
Environmentalists?
Well, no, The Lorax was an acceptable film. Actually, that wasn't bad. I thought that was better than people gave it credit for. Mm-hmm. But Mr. Peabody, which I didn't see Mr. Peabody, but, like, occasionally something will come out marketed to children who have no connection to it. It's like...
Oh, it's like Pete's Dragon.
Like Pete's Dragon.
Yeah.
That is really surprising to me that they are doing that.
Because
I'm like, I know Pete's Dragon, but I'm like probably the last age group that knows Pete's Dragon.
I'm kind of surprised that you do.
Because
I'm a little older than you, and I definitely did not see Pete's Dragon as a child.
I saw Pete's Dragon as a child, and... vaguely remember it, and what I've seen of the commercials for the new one, it does not resemble.
I read something
Pete's
that it does not
tone,
resemble Pete's
in
Dragon
style in any way. I'm like, is Disney just rebooting any IP they can here?
That was the baffling thing to me. And look, this is one where apparently I'm in the minority, where generally it got very good reviews, and I was bored out of my mind. Like that was, and it's happening this year. Like, I think I've just been overloaded with mediocrity in 2016 because there have been two or three movies where I've just had to leave for a little while.
Ooh.
Like, I'm not angry. I'm just so bored that I'm like, if I don't get up and do a lap of the theater, I'm not going to make it to the credits.
Well, that's what it is, right? Because you're a guy, you have to finish, if it's a shitty movie, you have to finish it
generally.
So that you can certify, yes.
Right.
There was not a turn at the end that made it worth it. I sat the whole way through.
And I was bored out of my mind by Pete's Dragon, and then it got good reviews. But the in theory... And I think we said this last week, so I'm repeating myself. But when we were kids, you would hear hype for a Disney movie for like a year before it came out.
Definitely.
Well, you'd watch the movie, and then immediately after that, you were like, what are they going to do next year?
And they would start selling you on Beauty and the Beast, then Aladdin, then Lion King. And you would know.
I remember. I remember like climbing a beautiful ladder of Disney movies for every
after
year
Mulan.
Of my life.
Right, but they...
After Mulan, it started. I love Mulan.
There was all of this hype. And now, so I just started counting at some point. Like, I think Pete's Dragon was the seventh Disney movie this year.
That's terrible, because as you said that, I was like, what's even the last Disney movie I had? Can I even think of one? And I'm like, oh yeah, Pete's Dragon, we just talked about it.
Yeah, it's...
I also slowly made that connection.
And it's the third, it's the third reboot of a property, because they rebooted The Jungle Book a couple of months ago. That was actually good.
Idris Elba's Shere Khan?
Yeah, that was good. But then they did another Alice in Wonderland, like, 2 months later.
Really?
And, yeah, there was Alice Through the Looking Glass
that
came out 3 months ago.
Okay.
Another live action one. And so that's three on let's bring back something old. In one calendar year, four live action things, because they did the Roald Dahl story, the BFG, just came out five weeks ago.
Oh.
Yeah. And... They already did Zootopia, and they have another proper cartoon coming out in November.
A proper cartoon,
a Disney animated film.
Classic,
yeah, yeah.
Really?
There are two of those this year. Why are they like? I know that to a certain extent there are other studios involved, a Pixar thing. The fact that Finding Dory was also this year is a little separate, but they're just. Do kids need more stuff than we did?
Well, how are they both saturating us with movies and somehow having less marketing?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. I mean,
like, less hype going on. Like, is it just that they're divided over what to hype, or is there a less concerted hype effort going on?
I have no idea. I don't know. And a bunch of these are not really hitting. Like the BFG and Pete's Dragon both kind of did okay. And Zootopia and Finding Dory did great, and those are the ones where I feel like there was a whole bunch of hype. Yeah. Less for Zootopia, definitely for Finding Dory. But it's like, make less movies, maybe? Like,
and, you know, focus your energies and love.
Renee, you watch After Children from time to time.
I do.
I hope that's not a secret.
No, that's not a secret.
Like,
it's hard for me to talk about all the different things I do. So usually I just boil it down to my art when I'm artfully.
Renee is a professional nanny, though. She's a childcare professional.
Do kids... I swear we're going to talk about your podcast. Do kids, like, when I was a kid, I would watch a movie for 6 months, and it would be the only movie I watched for 6 months.
My great aunt put a ban on Lion King because I watched it the whole summer.
Right.
And she was sick of the songs. Can you believe that? You can't believe that.
Is that still a thing? Or do the kids you watch a different movie every day, and that's why there are so many kids' movies?
I think that kids these days do many, many different things. And because of the internet, I think that there's this, like, immediate hype of who's watching what. Like, the girl I nanny today is too young and wanted to go and see Suicide Squad today. And I was like, uh-uh. But
Good job with caring for that child.
But she was like, all my friends are seeing it. And I was like, really?
Yeah.
Like, are they serious? Like, I was like, I want to see, like, Finding Dory with you guys. Like, right. I don't want to. But I also am right now watching a family who's much more active and, like, not. Like, they're much more likely to, like, binge watch at night with their family, like, a show on TV. Okay. They're not as much movie people. Like, okay. I think it's very rare. Like, they go to a movie once in a while, but I think it's rare for now families to, like, go see a movie. And I remember doing that more with my family. That was an occasion. Mm-hmm. And I'm finding that these very active families who are multitasking and doing like 800 sports are not spending time doing a movie because they already have so many other events that the thing that they watch at the end of the day ends up being easier full experience of a movie.
Yeah, and Netflix has made a new thing possible, which is binge watching series. We didn't have that when we were kids.
Like, no,
I didn't have that when I was kid, other definitely than, like, not. I may have taped episodes of a show.
None of the families I've nannied have used Netflix as much. Most of them, because of the age of the parents, a lot of them record stuff on, I don't know what they call it, like, DVR. Yeah. I was going to say TiVo. I'm like, that's not what it is anymore. But yeah, DVR stuff.
Yeah. But there's just so much stuff on tap. Because when I was a kid, we'd go over to our VHS tapes and we'd have so many of them, a few dozen of them, and that was all there was.
Right.
And you had like the pride of your library.
Right.
Yeah. That's always how I felt with my movies and my CDs. Yeah. And now there's none of that. It's like,
and now
I found
Netflix.
This thing. And I'm like, well, what did you watch? I don't know what it was called. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
What do you mean you don't know what it's called?
And now you can go on Netflix and watch a very snackable 20-minute segments of a show, but there's seven seasons of it, so it can just go on forever.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's not necessarily bad.
That's a show. We're hitting all the recurring themes because the death of physical media and the implications thereof is another repeated topic. But before we run out of time, not that we have a time limit, but we're talking a lot. So I wanted to have you on because you're in you are giving birth to a podcast as we speak, and very early. So this is probably not going to be out for a little bit, but I love the concept. So pitch it to our limited listeners. That wasn't a comment on your character, listeners. That was a comment on your quantity. We have a limited quantity of listeners, and they are all as good as gold. But hey, here's another podcast.
As long as they're all faithful, that's what you need in a podcast audience. Yeah, well, with the encouragement of people like yourself, we have thought about going into a podcast, and we recorded our first one. And our concept, although we're going to get a few in the can before we release it to the world, the name of our podcast is By Day, By Night. And the concept is that we are both people who have day jobs and then also have arts that we pursue, passion projects that we pursue. And we wanted to talk to other people who also do that, who sort of have this thing they do by day and this thing they do by night. Because, you know, when you do that, it can almost get to the point where I'm like in the cubicle and I feel like Clark Kent, and then I get on stage and I feel like Superman. You know? Mm-hmm. So we wanted to talk to other people who sort of have that dynamic in their life
that they keep multiple things going. And it's mm-hmm. not like I'm just being a barista until I get discovered. But it really isn't like, no, I'm doing this day job and this is a thing I actively want to perpetuate.
Yeah,
we were interested in talking to people like that and saying, how do they maintain this?
How do you balance your life? How does your day job influence your art and vice versa? Because sometimes a lot of people are like, oh, art always is what influences that. But what do you take the practical skills into the art to?
Yeah.
So we're excited. We've been talking about it a long time, too.
Yeah, we've been talking about it.
Because we had our wedding in July, so we had all these, like, mm-hmm. brewing ideas for...
After the wedding.
It was after like, the wedding. After that will be a whole new life. So we're
is
really
it?
Excited.
A whole new...
We don't do you feel... this is not what we're here to talk
about. No.
I mean, I've never asked anyone this question. Like, is there an immediate, like, after a wedding?
The day after the wedding...
Really planning, but the planning is no more. There's a lot of relief.
Well, we still have, like... 20 thank you notes, right?
Yes.
And like a few other little things to be like, thank you, vendor. Thank you, vendor. But yeah, the feeling of exhaustion the day after the wedding was, I could not even believe how tired we were.
And even just delayed onset stress, like only feeling then like there was so much cake and we were responsible mm-hmm. for so many favors. Mm-hmm. And if anything had gone wrong.
But it was kind of amazing. It was mm-hmm. like, it was just like, we are on vacation now.
Yeah.
It was just like.
Taking a vacation after is important.
It was, yeah. And taking a vacation the week before your wedding is important.
Yeah.
If anyone ever gets married,
that
is my suggestion.
Took time off
before
as well to prepare.
Suggestion.
And that was.
Oh, your wedding was great. Your wedding turned me around on open bars. Like, I've always been like, who fucking cares about an open bar? We're adults. We can afford as many drinks as we want whenever we want them. And I always thought it was dumb that people got so hyped about, oh, it's a wedding. There's going to be an open bar.
It's like funny. I don't even drink. And I always thought, like, I've always thought in my mind, the best parties have an open bar. Like,
no,
that's always how I've just personally felt. And
like,
I don't even drink that much.
No, I learned that I was wrong. Because, like, really, for years I've been like, why do people get so hyped? If I want 10 drinks, I can afford to buy 10 drinks. And in the moment, at your wedding, as I was on my 10th drink, I was like, oh, I get it. Because when it's not just free and available, you're way more critical about what you're doing. And this is like license to be like, no, this is an environment where I'm safe.
So, mom and dad, my friends, thank you for assisting them.
Thanks very much.
Great time.
No, that was the beautiful thing. Because, like, I was one of, like, I was about to say, I've been drinking more lately. Not in a warning sign way, in like a just like, I've been like giving myself permission more.
Enjoying
but,
life.
Yeah.
Enjoying
life. But,
next week, we'll be reviewing wines.
Right. But no.
Next week, we're bringing back Sideways.
Yeah. Yeah. Retro episode on Sideways.
I watched that thinking it was a comedy.
Allegedly, it is.
A little bit. It's like advertised, like comedy. And
right.
My friend and
Renee
I rented it from Blockbuster.
Renee has a friend whose last name is Giamatti, and she was like, I don't know why I like this guy so much. And I'm like, because he's like Phil Giamatti. He's like Paul Giamatti.
He's a good Facebooker, that friend.
Yeah. But no, what point was I was making a point about booze.
About enjoying life.
At your wedding, there
open
were like,
bars.
I was one of like 8 people running around saying, I never drink this much and it's great and I love you. Like, that just kept happening.
That's wonderful.
Oh,
there's
it was
so much love. I was so happy with how much love there was.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it was because of alcohol or not.
I think it was half and half. No, not even that. It was genuine love.
I think it was just expressed more easily.
Yeah.
It was nice.
And I'm still sorry about that broken glass, but I still maintain it wasn't actually my fault. So
I never even think about it.
That's good. I just know it would like that was like the sad drunk moment where it's like, I'm drunk enough that could have been my fault, but it actually wasn't, so I'm extra angry about it.
It should be added for the benefit of the listeners. This was during the garter toss, so there was movement happening.
It was after the garter toss.
No, it was on the garter toss.
During the garter toss.
Because I was, I mean, as far as I made an error, it was in not putting my drink down before the garter toss.
Yeah.
Because as I, you know, the garter kind of flung in my direction, like, but passed me to the left. And so all I did was like a slight lean But then whoever was standing behind me.
Roommate in college, her boyfriend, Bobby.
Damn it, Bobby. Bobby, like.
Bobby.
Bobby, if you're a listener, like lunged for it and like knocked the drink out of my hand and onto the floor. And that was the infuriating part because it's like, I'm drunk enough to have made that error on my own, but I managed not to, and someone else did it for me. That's bullshit. But that allowed the DJ to, like, very quickly play Walking on Broken Glass.
And oh my gosh, I didn't even notice that.
Yeah.
Oh, he was ready. He was ready for that.
Oh, I'm sure that he saw the glass and he was like,
he was a pro.
Queuing that up.
He does that twice a weekend.
Wes Kreider of One Left Standing Entertainment for those of
he
you
was a seriously, to plan your weddings. He was great.
He was great. So instead of talking about your podcast, we talked about your wedding. But just as good. No, I think it's appealing, I think,
that how lovely our wedding was. So yeah. I think that advertises us just as well.
You may on this podcast hear many people who are also at our wedding because a lot of the people who we'll be talking to are improvisers in Pittsburgh because a lot of the improvised comedians, improvised theater actors that we know are people who have day jobs and also do that. So those will be a lot of people we're talking to, although we're also hoping to talk to other actors who have day jobs, other musicians, singer-songwriters who have day jobs, talk to some people we know in New York, talk to some people in Chicago, maybe down the road. So we're hoping to have it not just limited to Pittsburgh improvisers, but we also think that it would be a great thing for the Pittsburgh improviser community, just for us to have some in-depth conversations with people about their work-art balance and for everybody to learn a little bit from each other about how we all maintain that and what tools
we use.
How
we all maintain our insane amounts of multitasking.
Yes.
It's not, it's interesting because it's not something, I mean, that's a pretty new thing for a whole generation to be doing, right? You know, I mean, there were certainly Gen Xers and to a much, much lesser extent, baby boomers who, you know, did some stuff during the day and then some other stuff at night. But I feel like that's the norm for us millennials. Now that we've all been lumped into millennials. I mean, it's like, and that's, you know, I mean, we're a little skewed because we do art things. And there are plenty of people our age who don't have a thing that fills up a lot of their time at night. But I feel like even those people are like the people who are super into yoga and fitness and doing that six times a week or who are mega nerds in the best way, who are like really into their Dungeons and Dragons campaign. Like, I don't know.
You're just listing all the things that I do.
Okay. you're all these things
I
at
have
once.
A problem. I really do everything. Like, you name it. And like, I wish I could dedicate so much time. And I think that's what also makes me so interested in doing our podcast. Cause I just want to learn all the life hacks, and I want to learn all the nuances of everything everyone does, which is probably why I'm an actor, because I want to be everyone at the same time and do all the stuff.
So this podcast just ends with you short-circuiting at a certain point. Yeah. No, that's why it's an interesting topic, because we're all doing that, and I feel like everyone has a different level of wrestling with, like, does it not count if my day job has nothing to do with the stuff that I'm passionate about? Is my goal eventually to have one overtake the other? Those are really interesting questions that are more or less unique to our generation.
I think so. I think there have always been ambitious people who kind of like did their thing at night that they actually wanted to do, or workaholics who just worked around the clock. I mean, the baby boomers definitely had plenty of those. But yeah, like you say, I think like in our generation, there are a lot of people who don't want to ruin their passion by making it their work and want to be stable and need to be stable because of student loans and housing prices and all that stuff. And who are more empowered to pursue their passions by the internet and by computer technology, by apps, by like all kinds of things we have at our disposal, which is part of what we want to talk to people about. What apps do you use? What tools do you have? What's your routine? How do you make it work? That's the thing we're very interested in talking to people about. So yeah, I do think that we in our generation, because of the technology that's come about, the innovation that's come about, we do have a unique opportunity for that the previous generations might not have had. They might have just given up on whatever their other thing was.
And at some point, you'll notice the meta level of the podcast itself being an example of the thing you're talking about on the podcast.
Yep.
Which is even more fun.
So many layers.
So that you can't really plug that because it doesn't have a home yet. You don't have a Twitter feed or a Facebook or a...
Not yet.
But just it'll...
The beautiful ideas in our head.
But
beautiful
it'll be...
idea of By Day By Night podcast.
It'll be called By Day By Night, and you will let me know when it's real, and I'll plug it on here.
Absolutely.
And, hey, we forgot to do other plugs, so let me quickly mention that... well, for one thing, if you're listening to this on Friday the 19th, Aaron has two great shows at Arcade Comedy Theater tonight. He has his stand-up showcase with Danny Palumbo. Danny and Aaron Bring the Heat. That's at 8. And I'm not getting into it. Comic Wars, which it's not the... I can't even approach this. There's Comic Wars tonight at 10. If you hear us talking about a show that sounds exactly like Comic Wars but doesn't have those two words attached to it in the future, that's the same thing. It's just its name changed, and I'm not going to talk about why. But regardless, the thing that you know and love as Comic Wars is happening tonight at 10 p.m. at Arcade Comedy Theater. And it's I've done it a million times. It's a great time, and you need to be there. Next Saturday, the 27th of August, is our next DV Loaded show with another huge, huge lineup of comics. Danny Palumbo, Norlex Belma. I'm trying to remember it all. Sorry to the people who aren't Danny and Norlex who weren't immediately at the top of my mind, but this is kind of a new lineup. Danny Palumbo, Norlex Belma. I will be your host. See how I bought a second there? And also on the show, Ray Zawadney, Mike Sasson, Felicia Gillespie, Brandon Schell, and Tom Usual. That's at Club Cafe. Tickets now at clubcafelive.com. What are your next shows?
Your Life's a Musical will come up early next month, so people can look at Arcade Comedy Theater and search for Your Life the Musical, or go to Facebook and search for Your Life the Musical. It's generally the first Friday. Don't have the schedule off the top of my head, but search for it at those places, and you'll find it.
Or look at the Arcade Facebook. Exactly. It'll be on there. And I've been to that show several times, and it's great. I love it.
It's a ton of fun. If you have children... please go to 321letsplay.com, or you can search on Facebook for Penny Arcade Comedy, or you can go to arcadecomedytheater.com and look for Penny Arcade. And that's our kids' show, which is a ton of fun.
And I was looking at my calendar, but did you mention Pittsburgh Comedy Festival and the Kids Comedy Cabaret?
Whoa! That's right.
Okay. Yeah, the Pittsburgh Comedy Festival is the last weekend in August, so the 27th, 28th. Are there shows the 26th as well?
People can find out on the website.
Find out. And then the Kids Comedy Cabaret will be 1 o'clock in the afternoon on Saturday, the 27th. And if it is the same as in years past, there will be Penny Arcade, but there will also be other shows for kids. And it's going to be... awesome.
And generally in Penny Arcade, we first have sort of an interactive portion where we get your children's ideas through what we call collaboration stations. We get different suggestions of them, of characters that they would like to see on stage, of lines of dialogue that they think would be fun to say. And we have a big wall where they can draw settings for us to play in the show. So we take your kids' ideas and we make them into theater, and it's tons of fun.
So then we just rate Hell or High Water and go home and rate it on a scale of 1 to 10, if you don't mind. Or 0. There's a chance that I've given a 0 before.
Oh, it's not a 0.
It's not that, but I want you to be aware of the option.
Huh.
I would give mine first while you think, but I don't want to influence yours.
Renee, go first while I struggle between
You order while I choose between the salmon and the
I struggle between American and European grading scales. You go ahead.
Wow.
Steve.
He grew up
Well, that's the thing is I have a tendency to rate higher and he has a tendency to rate lower.
I have a tendency to rate lower.
And then usually the exact middle is probably the accurate
Also, I'll average your two responses. I'll say this. Like, in my mind, if you walked out of a movie going, that was completely okay, I am neither impressed nor disappointed, that's a 5.
Okay.
And a 10 is, oh my God, that was one of the best movies of the year. And a 1 is, that
of
was...
Of the year.
Yeah. I mean, there should be a couple of 10s every year. It doesn't have to be the best thing you've ever seen.
Okay.
I'll go.
Okay.
I think I would give it a 7.
Oh. Okay. My initial thought was also 7. I was wondering whether I was being too harsh.
That's... yeah. Though, I think if I was a man... I may have given it a 8.
Mm-hmm.
So
it was a little duty.
It was a little duty. we're not saying that it was a little duty either because it was a turd, because it was not.
No.
Nor are we saying that because Jeff Bridges was in it. And
Here's the thing. I would give it a 7 because if I gave it an 8 or an 9, I would want to see it again. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't want to see it again because of the type of movie it is.
Right.
Therefore, I give it a 7.
Okay.
But it was really good.
Steve?
I was thinking about 6 or 7 and then wondering whether I was being too harsh. We've alluded to the fact that I spent my childhood in Europe, specifically in Belgium, where they grade out of 10 and are very strict. So this is like going back to childhood memories of Catholic boys' school for me. But yeah, I think if I were to look on all of the movies ever, I'd probably put it at about a 7. It's pretty decent. For this year, as we discussed, this has been a kind of a meager crop kind of year. I feel like it might be an 8 for the whole year, maybe an 8.5.
Yin's guys are stingy. I was going 9 all the way.
You're going 9?
Yeah.
Well, you've seen more movies than us.
All the movies.
Yeah, and that isn't even like, to a degree it's grading on a curve and, that is always going to be responding to what I've seen lately, but... I have basically no problems with it. Like,
that's what I was thinking, too, is I don't have anything that I was like, oh, I didn't like that. It's just that it's not necessarily what I would choose.
Sure. So when I've got no complaints, it's usually an 8 or a 9. And like, 10 is, like, there. I have no complaints, and also, like, I'm really, really amazed by it. Like, I can't go that far, but... I like everything about it. And for a podcast where we talked about the movie for 30% or less of the running time, this is definitely one of my favorites in months, and I recommend it highly to anyone who, can put up with qualified bleakness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's not a miserable time.
Tough characters will keep you in it.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, I don't know. Improvise a scene, the two of you. Because we don't usually have two improvisers.
Our suggestion is bleakness.
I mean, like, a three, like, you each get 3 lines back and forth.
Oh, I was going to be like, I'm from Texas, like in the movie, but that's pretty much all I got.
One of you is the Lorax, and the other is that character.
Which character?
The character that you were just alluding to.
Okay.
Go.
Your trees don't cost anything anymore. It's useless.
Well, trees are worth a lot, even on their own, because trees make life. And life's very important, wouldn't you say?
Life's worthless.
See.
Thanks for listening to You Can't Handle the Truth. Find your hosts on Twitter at Sean Collier, PGH, and at Aaron Kleiber. That's Kleiber, Kleiber. And follow us at Epicast TV. Head to www.epicast.tv for more great podcasts on the Epicast Network. You can email feedback to handlethetruthpodcast@gmail.com.